The Touchdown City Show is presented by Masters Law Firm, West Virginia's personal injury lawyers, and Parmar Stores. If there's not a Parmar store near you now, there will be one soon. Stone Church Studio in St. Albans, West Virginia. This is the Touchdown City Show.
Welcome into the Touchdown City Show. I'm Anthony Lewis in the Stone Church Studio, and thank you for listening to the show this week, wherever you are in the great state of West Virginia. And as promised, we're going to be celebrating the 30th anniversary of the 1993 undefeated regular season team, and no better way to kick it off than with the defensive captain of the team, Mr. Mike Collins. Mike, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm really good. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to kind of take a trip down memory lane with us and talk about this amazing season in Mountaineer history. But first, I have to ask you, does it feel like it's been 30 years to you?
It's funny you say that. I was having this conversation with someone a couple of days ago, and no, it does not. It's even weird to say that it's been 30 years. How quickly the time has gone. So no, it does not. And short answer, no. Long answer, I can keep expanding upon how I can't believe the time's gone so fast. And we got to take advantage of the time and spend time with your loved ones, all that stuff. But yeah, no, 30 years has gone by really quickly.
Yeah. So, and we were talking a little off the air before, you're going to try to put together a reunion for your teammates and open it up to the public. You were saying you don't have all the full details, but we want to at least put the Mountaineer fans on alert. Tell us a little bit about what you got planned, and then we will try to make sure they know where they can continue to get information to come out and see all the legendary players from that team.
Yes. Thank you, Anthony. I am trying to coordinate a 30-year anniversary of our team, and I've got it about 90%, kind of set. I just want to confirm the venue, but we're going to do it the weekend of the Pitt game. That is a night game. So where we do it at, we're going to start at either around 3, 4 o'clock. It's a reunion of that 93 team, but it's open to all former players. And then also the general public would love for them to come over, maybe take a picture, chat up former players, and even get an autograph of some guys. And so yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And once I get the final particulars, I promise, Anthony, I'll get that information to you. But we want to try to do it at a venue where, maybe there's some beverages and food, and then maybe even be able to watch the game afterwards. So I'll keep it, and would love for people to show up and say hello.
Fantastic. So for the listeners out there, make sure you're following the Touchdown City Show on social media, and I'll keep in touch with Mike and get this information out to you guys. So let's get into it a little bit. It's hard to believe it's been 30 years. But let's go back a season. Let's go back to 1992, because this 93 team was full of the same guys that were on the 92 team and just didn't quite get the same breaks that may have came along the next season. When you think back to that team, the 92 team, and then what was the difference between the 92 team and the 93 team that was able to kind of make sure they were able to pull out victories week after week?
It's a great question. Well, if you ask myself, if you ask other players on the 93 team that were within the program, they will tell you probably that 92 team just overall may have been a little bit more talented. I mean, you know, we had an Adrian Morrell at running back, a James Jett at receiver, Mike Compton, consensus All-American on the offensive line, Tom Briggs, defensive end. I mean, you know, we had and then some other older guys, experienced guys, even in the secondary with the Leroy Axums and the Kwame Smiths. So we had a good team, like a really good team. I felt coming into that season that we're going to have a lot of success. I mean, heck, I didn't even mention Mike Vanderjack at kicker. And, that team, I mean, you know, it was a couple things. You know, they don't have the tiebreaker rule now, the overtime rule. So, you know, the very first game we played Miami, Ohio, we end up tying. Mike missed a really long, I think a long field goal to win the game at the last second. And you know, we just were kind of a little bit out of sorts that first game. After that, though, we went on a run, and then we played BC, and we tied them, and they actually that game plan that they utilized against us that game is the exact same game plan they utilized against Notre Dame in '93 with Pete Mitchell and isolating him, and then you know you go to the Syracuse game, and myself and Tom Briggs and Leroy getting kicked out and then winning, you know, late and, you know, not getting some of the calls that game. And I mean, that Penn State game, we just couldn't punch it in there to end. And the Miami game, although, you know, we played them, it's funny. I can recall this stuff, Anthony, but that Miami game, you know, they're number one in the nation, Saturday night, but the way we came back in that game, and although we still lost, kind of showed that, you know, we had a little bit of heart. And the most disappointing game was the Rutgers game, mm-hmm. losing. Because that's what kept us out of the ball game. And it was late in the season, but we had some injuries, and we just couldn't punch it in. We couldn't figure it out offensively. And so, you know, I don't know if it was, it wasn't leadership. It's just, you know, when you, if you even back up, you know, we had Major in 89, his last year, and that 90 team was kind of built around Major. And so then you have a quarterback in Greg Jones, who, although is ultra talented, he's probably the most talented, besides Major, most talented quarterback that we had at West Virginia while I was there. But he just didn't have the reps. And so, you know, and so in turn, he would make some mistakes, not because he didn't have the physical talent. It's just that he just didn't have the reps, and he didn't have the game experience. And then you go from there, and we kind of 6-5 to 91. And we just didn't have that 92 team didn't have that full confidence of we can win. And then, you know, and like I said, overtime rule, I truly believe, you know, we beat Miami and Ohio overtime, and I truly believe that we beat Boston College in overtime. So mm-hmm. then you take a 5-4-2 team, and now they're 7-4, you know, and then a 7-4 team, you know, but with two additional victories going into that Syracuse game, you know, maybe we get a call. Maybe the, you know, because let's be honest, the officials, they're not biased, but when they see one team is ranked in the top 15 and another team is, you know, home but top 25, I mean, you know, there's some bias there, and you don't necessarily get those calls. And so maybe we get the calls, and, you know, who knows. But the difference between that team is, you know, we were a little, I wouldn't say pensive, but just didn't have that true confidence of knowing, you know what, we're going to win. Versus that 93 team with the seasoned veterans that we had. I mean, we had close to 20 guys, I think, that were fifth year seniors. We had a huge senior class. We had a lot of, younger talented guys, with Aaron Beasley's, the John Brownings on defense, along with Van Washington, Charles Manuel, and Mike Logan, heck, I can't forget him. And then even like a Rasan Vanderpool, who was a freshman. You know, these guys came in, they walked in with a little bit of swag, you know. And then with you have the older guys that have been there, done that. You have Jake and Darren at quarterback, which the team really truly believed in. And that was like And I can honestly say, I mean, the belief in either one of those guys at quarterback, everyone on the team knew that whoever was on the field, they could win a football game for us. And then, you know, you mix that with some of that younger guys who come in with a little bit of, you know, a little swag and a little confidence, and, you know, because they're so young, they don't know any better. It lended itself to a team that knew it could win football games. And that's really the difference. I mean, it was more, you know, that 92 team, you know, we knew we were good, but we didn't know we could win versus that 93 team. We knew we were good and we knew we were going to win. And we knew in regards of the situation, because, you know, some of those things that we went through in 92, there were some unbelievable situations. You know, we've handled everything. So we know how to handle it. And we've faced adversity and we know how to deal with it. So let's roll. Let's go.
You know, one of the things that really stood out to me as I started to research this team was the defense. I mean, obviously, in today's era of football, people put up 35, 45, 55 points. So, not that the offense didn't have the capabilities or have talent, it was just a different era. But this defense was super stingy with not allowing a lot of teams to even be in the game, or holding really tough teams to, you know, a low amount of points so the offense could make that move and win the game late in some close ones. There were a couple 17, 14 teams. Talk about that defense. And honestly, in my opinion, probably one of the most underrated defenses in WVU history, because people tend to talk about the 96 team and never really mention this defense. And when you go back and look at it, they probably deserve to be talked about.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely underrated. I mean, and the defense led that team. It really did. I mean, we put up points that year, and we could put them up in punches. But the other thing with that team offensively, we would turn the ball over, particularly early in the season. And, you know, that's why there was some changes at running back. Unfortunately, you know, first game of the season, John Jones goes down, and then it changed the whole dynamic of the offense. And so we go, you know, trying to find some guys, and end up Robert kind of, you know, got the gig, because he quit putting the ball on the ground. And so defensively, you know, we had to react early in the season, particularly against Maryland and Virginia Tech, with a lot of turnovers. But, you know, kept us in the game. But it was confidence, belief. But I mean, we have guys who could play, man. I mean, you know, rest in peace to Scotty Gaskins, but, you know, he had been there for 5 years with me, you know, been to Barry Hawkins up front. And then, I mean, heck, you had a John Browning coming in off the bench, you know, because we had Taurus and Derek Wiley at the end positions. And then our linebackers were really good. I mean, with Tafoni and Wes and Tim Brown and Puppy Wright. I mean, we had some guys who could play. And then the secondary, we were all returning starters. I mean, Aaron Beasley came in and started late in the season in 92. So he had, you know, he had some starter experience. And then Tommy and I, Tommy came in as a true freshman in 90 and played. And so this was his fourth year, my fifth year. Mayfield, it was his second year as a full-time starter, but his third year playing a lot of football. So, you know, and then that back end, and then that was my fifth year and, you know, 4 year starter. So, you know, I kind of led the team in that respect. And so when you have a lot of confidence back in the back end, it allows you to do some other things up front defensively and get creative. And Coach Dunlap, he, you know, as a defense coordinator, I think he saw that within the team, that, you know, we're knowledgeable, solid, you know, we had some good, very good talent, some guys who could play. And so, and then with that, you know, stability in the back end, we could do some different things, defensively. And so, and yeah, it wasn't the era of the air raid, but I mean, Maryland was playing run and shoot. Mm-hmm. And with the exception of us, you know, turning the ball over, I mean, we blow the doors off those guys for real. I mean, we shut them down. But Louisville was led by Jeff Brom at quarterback, who they had a really good offensive football team. And if you really want to see how good we were defensively, put on that Louisville game and the first series that we come out on defense. And I mean, it was unbelievable. We just set the tone for the game, but they were a good offensive team, and I think got up on us a couple touchdowns, but end up pulling that out late, getting some turnovers, and really in the fourth quarter, just shut them down, mm-hmm. shut them down. And then even Virginia Tech, I think we had four turnovers that game. They missed a field goal late, but they missed the field goal late because they weren't able to drive deep enough to get a better look at that field goal. Mm-hmm. And then you go like to Boston College, like I mentioned before about Pete Mitchell and their offensive game plan. The week before they played us, they put up 40 plus points on Notre Dame.
Right.
And who was number one in the country at the time. And we forced a lot of turnovers in the red zone, and we held them 14 points. So, you know, I don't think folks give us enough credit. And you're right, Anthony. That's one of my pet peeves in West Virginia football history is that defense in 93 doesn't get as much credit as they deserve.
Well, that's what we're here for. We're here to shine the light where it needs to be shined. Because, yeah, I mean, just as I started looking at it and researching, getting ready for the season, and I knew, knowing that I was going to do this look back, I was like, man, this defense is stingy.
One more thing. Let me add this.
Yeah, absolutely.
We didn't give up a rushing touchdown until the Pitt game, which was, I think, the fifth game of the season.
Would that have been Curtis Martin?
Yeah. Well, he's got his all-time collegiate highlight is against me, getting my feet stuck in the ground and making me miss. But yeah, I mean, you know, but we were stingy against the run, and you know, that kind of sets the tone. You know, defensively, if you can stop the run, then it forces teams to throw the ball. And as I said before, we were getting the back end.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So one of the most famous plays in WVU history, especially in recent history, is Dalvin Cook in the pile. As Clemson's getting ready to go into the end zone, he strips the ball and goes the other direction about 98 yards. But somebody else did the same thing years and years before. And obviously it was you against, I believe, Missouri.
Am I
coming off the top of my head? And that's one of the plays, of course, it's in the highlight film, and it's one of the plays that really stands out through the course of the season, because you didn't see a lot of that, I think.
Right.
Especially, you know, that's just a crazy play. When, you know, Missouri at the time, I think they were in the Big 8, which wasn't even the Big 12. Yep. You know, they're getting ready to go in and score, then boom, you turn it, you just strip it and go the other way. What do you remember about that, and how did that opportunity present itself?
Right, and ironically, Dalvin and I both were number 25.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, leading up to the game, all week of practice, so Kevin Ramsey came in as a defensive backs coach in that spring of 93, and so Coach Dunlap, Steve Dunlap, he had moved over to the linebackers coach, but he was the defensive coordinator. Collins, that running back, he swings the ball. I think you could strip one out. When you get in the pile, come in second guy, knock that ball loose. Collins, he bids every day. Collins, you can get that ball. He holds that ball loose. You can get it. I mean, and when I say every day, it's like literally every day during practice and in the building, you can get that ball, Collins. He holds it loose. Go get it. And you know, you watch the film and you see that he was a little loosey goosey with the ball. Big guy. He's like 6'3", 260-pound running back. So what I remember that play, they were driving on us. I don't know if it was late first half or early second half, but I want to say it was early second half. But anyway, they're driving the ball. Inside of obviously our 10-yard line, in the pile, I'm the second guy coming in, and I noticed the ball out. So I went to hit him to kind of jolt him, knowing that I could get into his arms. And I got into his arms, got into his chest, and took the ball and took off running. And nobody blew the whistle, so I just kept running. And so, yeah, that was a play. That's just coaching. I mean, you know, as much as anything, hey, Mike, this is look at the film. Look at this guy. Look how he carries the ball. This is an opportunity to create a turnover. Mm-hmm. And then the reinforcement of that, that's what that was. So, you know, we're talking about the difference between the 92 and 93 team. You know, luck, you create your luck sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, and particularly good teams. And that was, yeah, it was a lucky play, maybe, but I created that luck as well. So, you know, so, yeah, it's fun. I know we were playing Pitt, you know, a couple weeks after that, I think, and I got an interception. So that's where Coach Ramsey, it's like, Collins, this is when they line up in this way, they're going to do this, and so you can jump this route and you can take one. I was like, all right, I got you. And so I intercepted the ball inside the 10. I was hoping that I was going to be able to return that one for a touchdown. That would have been awesome to have, you know, a 90-plus fumble return and then a 90-plus interception return for a touchdown. But Ken Brown got in my way. So if you talk to Ken, tell him to get out of my way.
Let's talk a little bit about 93 Miami, West Virginia, and Morgantown. It's late November. Obviously, at this point, you guys have made your statements, and you guys are still kind of fighting for some national respect. There was a lot of doubters at this point of the season. Well, was West Virginia for real? The Hurricanes are obviously coming off of playing in the national championship the year before. But what do you remember about the lead up to that game? And well, let's start there. The lead up to the game, practice, what was it like, especially with all the South Florida guys on the roster?
Yeah, it was a fun week. That week we were ranked in the top 10. I want to say number 9. And so, you know, this was an opportunity. The team late in the season, we knew this was an opportunity. We had established a goal that we wanted to play for a national championship. And I mean that. Like, we had a meeting preseason in the summer, and Coach Nealon and the team, we had a goal of playing for the national championship. And so it was coming to fruition. But the team that we – to get there – you know, you have to beat the man to be the man, right? And we're talking about a team that in 92 that played for a national championship. In 91, they won a national championship. You know, they were the big dogs. And if you look early 90s, late 80s, Miami was it. Miami's Alabama now. I mean, you know, that's who it was. Mm-hmm. And so so that week of practice was, you know, the weather was starting to cool. And as progressively as the week went on, the weather cooled off. And it was weird because it was kind of a change of seasons. I think we had thunderstorms, so I'll never forget this. I think the Wednesday or Thursday practice, we have double rainbows right over the stadium. And everybody's like, this is a sign. This is a sign. And, you know, looking back now, it's just, I mean – at the time, I thought it was hilarious, but the things that motivate people, right? Mm-hmm. The things that galvanize people, the things that you know, give them belief, and that was one of those things that, you know, people were looking, yeah, this is a sign. We're gonna get this done. This, you know, this is in there. It's written, it's in stone, it's gonna happen. You know, now the opportunity's there. Now let's make it happen. And so during that week, you know, guys were really focused. There was a belief walking around the facility that, you know what, we're going to get this done. You know, after practice, going home, just, you know, just focused. And and that focus led to the outcome.
Mm-hmm. You know, and what a game. I mean, back and forth.
All time.
You know, just a defensive battle. I mean, I think it was 3-0 going into halftime, if I remember correctly. A couple missed opportunities, though, for us. You guys created some some turnovers, and then we kind of just – I think we missed a field goal.
Missed two field goals.
Yeah, you're right. And then, you know, just wasn't able to put points on the board. But a hell of a battle with the Hurricanes. And obviously, it leads up to the end. You know, Robert Walker, around the end, what do you remember about – I've been to so many games – and I just remember that being one of the loudest pops. It was almost a Road Warriors WWF pop, like a Stone Cold Steve Austin pop. Like, the crowd just goes nuts. What do you remember about that? You know, and you guys still had to come out and stop them, but what do you remember about that play and the reaction?
Well, to your point, that was the loudest crowd because that was the largest crowd in Mount Midfield history.
Yeah, 70,000.
Yeah, well, it was the official crowd is 70, but it was more like 75,000 people in that stadium. It was a build of anticipation from our fans as well. I mean, you think about it, you know, 88, we played for the national championship. 89, we're ranked in the top five. And then we lose a couple of games late in the season. Upset by Virginia Tech, but our fans, and then those next 3 years, you know, our fans were really wanting to cheer for us, and not that we didn't have, you know, good crowds before, but man, that was just, and but also being the last home game of the season, you know, people were juiced for that game, and so with that play and Rob going around the end, you know, and you were right about the defensive struggle. I mean, you know, Miami had a really good defense and really good defense. You know, but Ray Lewis was a true freshman that year playing middle linebacker. Mm-hmm. They had, defensive tackle, freaking stud. And Rohan Marley was playing linebacker, but, we got him out of the game. I think we kept running ISO at him, and he was a little undersized playing linebacker. And so the backup came in, and the backup ended up playing in the NFL for a number of years. But yeah, it was just and then, you know, just the roar of the crowd. We knew we were going to pop one. It wasn't a matter of when. It wasn't a matter of if. It was a matter of when. And you know, that play was preceded by, a great punt return by Mike Baker, and it was kind of set up our offense in a really good spot, and you could just feel it. It was coming, and the tenseness in the crowd, everybody knew it was coming. It was coming, and then when it happened, and Robert goes around and scores, it was just like you mentioned, the top just blew off the stadium. It was phenomenal. But then, like you said, we had to refocus. We got to get up back out there and stop him. So it was a good game. It was, in my estimation, I mean, you know, I know that Louisville West Virginia triple overtime game is one that's in the history books of best games at Mountaineer Field. But I don't know, I would put that one up against any game played at Mountaineer Field. It's one of the all time great games.
So for the older folks, you know, I'm quickly approaching 50, but I always tell people it's almost like biblical. There is a line in Mountaineer history, and I call it pre-Pat White. Right. Everything before Pat White, people almost dismiss, you know, because they haven't been around long enough to know. And then there's the post-Pat White era that people, you know, because when I've heard people say, the most electrifying player ever is Tavon Austin. I'm like, yeah, but there are guys, you know.
That's a good play.
Yeah. Sure. So, you know, so historically, you are absolutely correct. Louisville, 93 Miami, the Penn State 88 game, and then the older cats, the OGs will probably tell you more about some of the late 70s, yes, mid 70s games, you know.
Well, that a couple of those Boston College games in the mid to late 80s, I think 83. I mean, you know, when Doug Flutie was he won the Heisman Trophy, but he never beat West Virginia.
Yeah, 84 Penn State or 84 Boston College. That one goes up there. There's been some barn burners, but you know, what an amazing night. And then, of course, you've got to turn around and get refocused because you've got to close it out. You've got to go finish in Boston. And you, the same night you guys knock off the Hurricanes, you know, so they're eliminated. And now, and then Notre Dame, you mentioned earlier, Notre Dame gets upset by Boston College. I think, was that game in South Bend?
That game was in South Bend. And that was the week after, it was the week after the game of the century of Notre Dame versus Florida State, number one versus two.
So, you know, they are looking to go and play for the national championship, get knocked off by Boston College, a good Boston College team. And then you guys got to focus in and try to close this thing out. Was there, let's just be honest, you guys were so flat the whole game.
Super flat.
Was it a hangover from Miami going into Boston?
Yes and no. I will tell you this. I had been sick that week before the game.
I don't
know if there was something like a little flu or something that had gone through the team.
Yes.
But I mean, you know, I normally play about 195. I came in the game like 185. But I wasn't going to miss it. And you can't see it on TV, but it was freaking cold up there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Jake was limited because of his hamstring. And let's be honest, Boston College was pretty good.
Yeah, they were good.
They lost a couple games early in the season. One at Northwestern that they should not have lost. And so they were, I think, preseason, they were probably picked in the top three or four. So Glenn Foley, they had good running backs, had a really good offensive line. They had a great coach, and Tom Coughlin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had some talent on defense. They had a Mike Mamula who ended up being a first-round pick. So, you know, you got to give credit to them as well as far as the flatness. But, you know, it goes back to that belief. You know, they got inside the 10-yard line early first quarter. We forced a fumble, recover a fumble. Another opportunity they had, they threw a fade against Bees, and, you know, he picks it off in the corner. When we needed to, we stepped up. And then, you know, obviously late in the game, you know, when we needed a turnover, we forced a fumble and get the ball back for our offense. So, yeah, hangover, not, I think, as much as anything, you know, they were really good offensively, they were playing some pro concepts, and they had the quarterback, and they had a guy in the inside of their offense with Pete Mitchell at tight end who could create mismatches. And so, it would put pressure on your defense because, you know, with the way defenses and offenses were then, you know, you play with a tight end. Well, that tight end is that kind of a, if he's a hybrid, like a Pete Mitchell who could block, but then also he could get out and run good routes. Well, he was too fast for a linebacker, and a lot of times he was too big for a safety. And so I played pretty well. He got me one time. I had consciously worked on improving my tackling my senior year. I would go and try to lay guys out, but I'd miss tackle. So it's like, all right, I'm going to start targeting like the waist area and to improve my tackling. And I think he understood that and watched film on me, and he went down low with me and ran me over and scored a touchdown. And that's when they took that lead on us. But yeah, They're a good team. They're a really good team. That was a good football game as well.
You know, it's crazy to think all they had to do is just run the football and run out the clock, and you don't end up being, you know, you don't reach that achievement of an undefeated regular season, and your shot at national championship goes out the door. But and then all of a sudden, of all the things, they put the ball on the carpet. And it, right. And at that moment, you can, because I went back and watched some of it, at that moment, there's new life. It's right. It's almost like that's the beginning of the game for West Virginia. Brand new yep. life.
Right.
What do you remember about getting that ball back and kind of giving it back over to the offense?
Kind of to your point, it was new life. But it was a belief. I mean, Darren was coming into the game, and he was going to lead us to victory. We knew, the value of those of both of those guys, a quarterback, and we knew either one of them could win a football game for us. And so, you know, I think Jake had gone out maybe a couple series before them where he just couldn't move anymore. And then we went down the field and scored and made it, I think it was, heck, I want to say 14-9, something like that. Or we went, 9-7 and then 14-9 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, and then getting the ball back and, I mean, you know, we're out there like, we're going to get this ball. Let's go. And I think they end up, you know, they got a first down on us running the ball. And a lot of that was the poor tackling because we're trying to strip the ball. And then we get it out there. And, you know, between Dave and Mike Logan recovering it, we give our offense another opportunity and just watched it. And we just knew we were going to score. It's like it was kind of that belief, and it was that's the power of that. When you have confidence, not only in yourself, but in your teammates, that's what makes a team. You know, there's a lot of teams that are super, super talented, but they don't necessarily believe they can win. And that kind of goes back to that 92 team. I mean, we were a really good team. We were a really talented team, but just didn't have that true belief of, you know what, we're going to win every game. We walk on the field, we got, you know, this is our deal. Versus that 93 team, regardless of when, we knew we were going to win. And when we were prepared, we knew we were going to win the game. So it was pretty cool to watch how that unfolded. And then again, we had to stop them because they could have came down and, you know, that was before the overtime. They could have came down and tied the game. Mm-hmm. And if they tie, I don't know if we get the Sugar Bowl bid. We might have gone down to like third in the pecking order with our conference.
Yeah, and one of the things, what do you remember, and I want to ask you about, what do you remember about Stud still throwing the ball into the corner to Ed Hill? What do you, the sideline?
Well, now that's a back shoulder throw. That's how they draw it up. It was a play nobody kind of seen. Back then you say, dang, God, he underthrew it. But it's a back shoulder throw. And I think, you know, that's just practice. And you got a fifth-year senior in Darren Stunstill. You got a fifth-year senior in Ed Hill. The only times they practiced that play and how many times Darren has thrown that ball to Ed and how many times Ed has had to get off coverage on a corner. I mean, you know, those things matter. And the more that you do it, the better that you become at it. And so, you know, again, that belief, we knew something good was going to happen. Didn't know it was going to be that good. I mean, that was just a phenomenal play. And it was, you know, and you go to we're talking about Robert Walker's run, but you know, you go to that play. That's one of the most iconic plays of that season as well. It was awesome. And then we were up 15-14. And so we got the 2-point, I think, Jay Kearney got a 2-point conversion. So it got us up by three, gave us a little bit of breathing room. So we knew we were going to lose the game, but, it was awesome. It was awesome. The excitement on the sidelines after we score and then huddle up, dude, let's go. We got to hold these dudes. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Come on now. Now it's on us. This is what we want. Let's go. And, that's what we did.
Yeah, what an ending. I mean, just to what an exclamation point to an amazing season when you think about it. I mean, the drama, the comeback, you know, the whole deal, the play, you know, what a ending to an amazing right. season. Right. What do you remember about the trip home? If you remember correctly, there was fans that met you guys at the Postcard Center.
Yeah. I want to say it was around 4 o'clock, 3:30 start. So, but you know, November in Boston, cause so far north, it got dark at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock,
yeah,
4 or 5 o'clock. And we didn't get back to Morgantown. The reason I bring that up, so it was a mid-afternoon kickoff. Game ends at around 7-ish, 7:30. And then we, you know, get to the airport, fly back. I think we didn't get back to like 1 or 2. Mm-hmm. And the parking lot was nuts. It was crazy. And it was so satisfying to see so many people there and to know that, you know, they got some enjoyment out of us, their appreciation, their love, and it was reciprocated as well. I mean, we really appreciated the fact that they were there and all those people were there. And, you know, it's kind of like, oh my God, all these people are here for us at 2 a.m. This is crazy. And you know, it was a wonderful experience. That's the best way I can describe it. It was a wonderful experience.
You lived through and probably vividly remember the 88 team and the success, you know, that Mage had in 88 and mm-hmm. being a West Virginia guy. And then obviously you were there in 89 and then there were those years that we talked about where things just didn't mm-hmm. come through. For a West Virginia kid, what's it like for you now looking back, knowing that you were able to deliver such a memorable season to the people in West Virginia and nobody can ever really take that away from you?
Right. Nobody can. I mean, you know, so 88, I'm a senior in high school, graduated from Huntington High, the Pony Express. You know, we had that senior year, had a really good football team, ended up losing the semifinals of the state. But you know, obviously Marshall in West Virginia, and Marshall was in the midst of beginning the run of greatness. And then West Virginia to see them, but to me, it was like, you know, that's who I followed. I enjoyed watching Marshall, but, and so that 88 team, you know, so, and it's hard to explain to people, although you were a part of it in 93, your senior of high school, it's how much excitement was around that team and the way that people connected to that team, excuse me, in a way that, and Major Harris and how transcendent of a football player he was, and that, and everybody in West Virginia, including in Huntington, West Virginia, were like, that's our guy. That's us. He's representing us. He's representing West Virginia, and he's a part of us. And so when I came to West Virginia, my goal was I was going to win a national championship. That's what I came to West Virginia to play and win a national championship, because that 88 team showed that it was possible. And then Major being a sophomore that year, I figured, okay, I'm going to redshirt 89 and I'm going to come in and start in 90. That was just me. That's just my mindset. But that's the mindset any player needs to have if they want to be successful. And so I'm like, I'm going to play with him in 90. We're going to be top 10. It's, you know, then it's the program's going to go from there. We're going to, and by then his senior year, we're going to have a team. We're going to play and win the national championship that year. And, you know, things didn't quite go that way. So then you get to 93 and, you know, my fourth year as a starter, and my teammates honoring me as a captain of the team, and then being able to to generate that same type of excitement for the state of West Virginia, knowing that, you know, the more that we won, the more proud the people of the state were, the more proud our fan base became, and we were able to kind of pump our chests out again, you know, that was really, really gratifying. It was, you know, and as a, you know, obviously as a kid of the state, you know, I had that connection with the folks in the state. So it was extremely gratifying. And then, you know, I've been there for 5 years, and then my last game ever at Mountaineer Field is that 17-14 game against Miami, you know. And then, you know, they announce the seniors, and I'm the last player that gets the announcement because of alphabetical order. I mean, Rich Bram as one of the captains, Tim Brown as one of the captains, then Mike Collins. You know, the three captains with, you know, the highest in the alphabet is a C. So, yeah, so I get to be the last guy called out. And then, you know, to hear the fans cheer, it was, you know, I wish I could explain it better. I wish I could allow people to be in my shoes, but there's literally no better feeling to be on Mountaineer Field and make a play and hear the crowd roar for you. It's addictive, and it's awesome. It's awesome, it really is. And so for a kid from Huntington, West Virginia, to come up to West Virginia and earn a captainship and finish his career as an undefeated team, the last undefeated team to ever come out of WVU, so the last 30 years, so it's pretty gratifying. It is, and the older I get, the more I appreciate it, and the more I appreciate you know, my teammates and my coaches there at West Virginia. It's a wonderful experience.
Well, all great stuff, and I appreciate you taking the time to share your memories and your thoughts with us here on the Touchdown City Show, and just, you know, even for me. And I know 10 times, a million times more for you guys, an amazing season and very memorable. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. We went a little longer than even expected, but just so much stuff to talk about and great stories. And I appreciate you taking time to join us this week.
No worries. I thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll cut it there, but man, yeah, all good stuff, man. That was good stuff. So sometimes when I talk to guys, they don't remember,
right?
They don't remember little nuances, like, you know, Glenn Foley. There's certain things that people just forget, man. You've got all that stuff still going. So that was all great, man. Good stuff.
Yeah, I have the memory of an elephant. Which is good and bad, because I can remember stuff from like second grade, and I'm like, oh, or I will remember something from high school, like, oh, I think I offended that person. I wonder if they like me or not. You know, I can be kind of neurotic, but yeah, it's funny. It's funny you say that, Anthony, because I'll be talking to guys like teammates, like, how in the hell do you remember that? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know, I just do it.
Yeah, I get that a lot too, and. Like, I got a friend of mine, he's up in the Northeast now, like New Hampshire or something, and he listens. And he'll text me, he's like, how do you remember this stuff? I'm like, well, I remember it enough to go back to know I need to go back and rewatch or read about it or look something up, you know what I mean? Like, there's certain things at this point I'm starting to kind of let go of. But
Right. I know, and it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to let go. But speaking of letting go, it was Warren Sapp was the defensive line.
Yes, Sapp. Yep.
Yeah.
Warren Sapp.
So,
yeah, great story. And I'll tell you this real quick, then I'll let you go. A friend of mine who's now a doctor and really involved in his church at this point in his life. But back then he was, but I think it was 94, because if I remember correctly, because of the Big East stuff, they had to come back to back seasons. They came in 93 and they came in 94. So they were the typical Miami team. We played them at noon. Mm-hmm. I remember being up in the stands where I'm standing there, and here they come. They run down, and what are they known for? They come in and start kicking pylons. You know, this is our house. Well, my buddy pulls an orange. His name's Mark. Pulls an orange out of his bag. No, he had them tucked in his pants. Pulls two oranges out. Throws this orange. And you remember how everybody used to tie their jerseys up so their backs were exposed? This orange from the second level goes down, takes one hop off the turf, hits Warren Sapp right square, right above his pant line in that bareback's area.
Yeah, because it was an early game. Because I remember that game because I had come back with some guys from Huntington, and I was like, "Yeah, I'll get us tickets." And they didn't realize that I was going to be able to get us sideline passes. Mm-hmm. And so it was me and like three other guys from Huntington. You know, and we're on the sidelines. And we're on offense, and a play. We're at the bench, so this is how much it's changed. They used to give us passes, and we can just walk around. Mm-hmm. I was on the bench, and with my friends from Huntington, you know, they just had a pass, and so Mike Karen used to hook me up. But anyway, play comes over to the bench. Ray Lewis. I mean, you know, just. I don't know who was running the ball. It might have been Robert or Jimmy Gary or somebody like that. And just, you know, kind of cracks it. And my one friend, he's like, "Man, forget this. I will go up the stands. This shit's kind of scary. These motherfuckers is too big.
Oh, yeah.
They running too fast, and they are too big. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go up the stands." I was like, "What?" He's like, "Man, for real. Mike, I want to go up to the stands, dude. I can't watch here." I was like, are you fucking crazy? He's like, "No, I'm serious. Let's go." And so we had to go up into the stand because they, you know, people don't appreciate, until you're in there, they don't appreciate how fast the game is. Mm-hmm.
On the sidelines, you can really get hurt if you're ever just as a spectator.
Yeah,
you got to be careful. So.
Visit our new website at touchdowncity.com. The Touchdown City Show is produced by Anthony Lewis in partnership with HD Media, the Charleston Gazette-Mail.